altogether simple. Whence it is manifest that God is not able to be, what? Moved. Huh? And Socrates, you know, talks about that in the Phaedo, huh? That the simple is unchangeable, right? And that the composed is changeable, right? Then he's not exactly sure how to show that the soul is simple, so he goes to another argument, right? But they kind of see that, right? And it's a very, very common thought there in the greatest of the philosophers. Now, the third argument. Because everything that is moved acquires by its motion something, and it arrives at that to which, what? Before it had not attained. Huh? But God, since he's infinite, comprehending in himself all the fullness of perfection of the whole being, is not able to, what?
Acquire
anything. Nor extend himself towards something to which before he had not attained. Whence in no way to him belongs, what? Motion. Now notice the order of the three arguments, right? In a pure act, could always come into the what, very beginning of knowing God, right? And of course, in the Summa Theologiae came up in the beginning of the discussion of the simplicity of God. Mm-hmm. So he gives that argument first in the simplicity, right? And then he gives the one from what, God being infinite, huh? Mm-hmm. It could also maybe argue from his being universally perfect, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, but he gives the guy who has everything, right? But literally, God is everything, right? Huh? That's kind of the problem with Euthyphro there. Now, how can you give God something? See? No question. Mm-hmm. And hence he says it is, and this is a little kind of a sign, that some of the ancients, huh? As, and use that phrase that Aristotle uses in the physics, as it were coerced, huh? As it were forced, right? By the truth itself. They laid down that the first beginning was what?
Immovable.
Yeah. And even in mathematical physics, huh? They make the conservation laws, right? Beginning of everything. And even, you could say, you know, that the first matter, in a sense, remains without change. Under different forms, right? So it's not completely, you know, separated from change, but in a way, change does ultimately depend upon something unchanging. I mean, could you have the unchanging depending upon the changing? I don't think that would make any sense at all. To have the unchanging depend upon the changing. Does that make any sense? I don't know. There might seem to be a paradox to every verse, that the changing depends upon the unchanging. Huh? Mm-hmm. As they say, you know, even if you hit the baseball, and it's kind of the outfield there, it should be the same ball that was hit. Something should remain, you know. And if there's nothing that remains, the same, so to speak, right? It's not the same ball. There's something fishy going on here. And the question with the ball is even hit from the outfield, right? So it's interesting how the changing depends upon the unchanging. Huh? Mm-hmm. Aristotle gets into the biological works there, you know. He talks about how you have to have something at rest in order to move. Huh? Mm-hmm. An example, of course, is that of the mouse that they must have seen on a pile of grain. The mouse can't get anywhere because the pile keeps on giving away, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to rest yourself upon something unchanging, huh? So, now the first objection was taken from Augustine, huh? And he says, to the first, therefore, it should be said that Augustine there speaks in the way in which, what? Plato spoke, right? Saying that the first mover moves itself, huh? Naming all what operation or doing motion, huh? Okay. Now, Sometimes when you take act and ability, there's two ways that they do it there in the thing. So we don't call, we call motion or doing, let's not be too precise here, act first, right? Okay, motion or doing. And you have words like action, right? Activity, that are derived from the word act, right? You see?
Mm-hmm.
Now later on, in the middle of the ninth book, Aristotle will carry the word act over to what? Form. Huh? And how do you do that? You see? Well, the way Aristotle does it there is by seeing a likeness of ratios. So he says, as my eyes, when they're closed, but I'm not a blind man, right, are to what? By seeing when I open my eyes, so the wood before it's been formed is to the wood formed into a chair or a table or a statue, right? Okay? Mm-hmm. So the wood, in a way, is to the statue something like my eye is to seeing when my eye is closed, but I'm not a blind man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the eye goes in ability to act, and the wood goes in ability to act.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's by a likeness of ratios. Huh? But now Thomas, in the De Potentia, he gives another way of understanding it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that form is the end of emotion, or it's the cause of emotion, right? So there he explains form as act by its ratio to motion, right? As its beginning or by its end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So two different ways of understanding the equivocal by reason, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But by reason of what? Two different ways of doing it, two different ways, huh? It's kind of interesting to compare those texts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Thomas will point out how just as we call motion or doing act first, and then form later on we call act, and that's why the word act and activity would never be applied to form, because it's stuck with the first meaning of the word.
Mm-hmm.
So the ability to move or to do something is seen by our mind before the ability for what? Form. I think you see it even in daily speech, you know, that we talk about ability, we're thinking first of the ability to do something.
Mm.
Okay? You're able to speak French, or you're able to play the piano, or you're able to walk, or you're able to see, or to hear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't think, by the way, of the wood as having ability, huh?
Yeah.
See? But the wood is able to be formed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some kind of ability there, but it's kind of a secondary meaning, huh? Now, eventually, we'll separate and distinguish between motion and doing. Although it's a little, you know, maybe like a clarity in the names and so on. But Plato kind of uses them interchangeably, right? But you're using these as opposed to that over there. Okay? Now, second, the beginning of metaphysics. I think we did the prelude to metaphysics. And Aristotle is giving the order in our knowing. And he says sensing comes first, and then memory, and then experience, which is a collection of many memories of the same sort of thing. And then there starts to be a knowledge of the universal.
Mm-hmm.
When you have experience, many things of the same sort, and your mind compares these things and separates out what they have in common. And that's the beginning, he says, of art or science. Okay? And he uses art or science kind of interchangeably, as being knowledge of the what universal, as opposed to knowledge of the singular or singulars, which you have in sensing, memory, experience.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of a footnote to say, but you know, sixth book of the ethics, we have elsewhere distinguished between art and science, but for him it's not important to do so at that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you might use motion or doing, right? Is walking a motion? I suppose you say it's a motion now. But when you're walking, you're doing something. You know? You might kind of use these almost interchangeably, right?